Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode, another special episode, no less, of the Collapsing Game Shelf Podcast. I am Adam. I am here with Debbie, and we are what?
I don't even get to say my own name
anymore. Well, there you go. We're leaving that in now, just so you know. We are doing kind of like a special segment. I've had a few people come up to myself, and Debbie's definitely had a few people come up to her and ask her about board games that can be played with two players. And that doesn't necessarily mean games that are two-player exclusive. It just means games that you can play with two players that you can play with their significant other or any sort of combination of two players you want to go with.
I'm pretty sure last time I think I said the same thing. I often get the question, it comes up with a lot of females when there's, you know, like my husband or my boyfriend, my significant other is a big gamer and, you know, I'm not, but board games kind of seems to be the middle ground. It seems to be kind of the happy place that everybody can go. And often they kind of say, I really don't want to spend my time doing the massive bloodshed thing. I want to play a game that I enjoy, but that they'll enjoy as well. So, you know, help me out. And, you know, what kind of games can you recommend? So that's very often, it's a very common thing for me to hear.
So the game that we've chosen to talk about this time around is Hanami Koji by Emperor S4 Games. The back of the box has a little blurb that talks about that you're an owner of a traditional restaurant. You do your best to attract the 7 best geisha to join you by collecting their favorite items. That's it. That's all there is to it. That's literally all it says on the back of the box.
It's like in like 10 languages on the back of the box.
It is in a few languages. It's in Cantonese, it's in Mandarin, it's in English, and it's in Japanese. At the end of the day, I mean, this is a light, easy to pick up, easily playable, easily approachable, yet super deeply strategic card game. It's wicked.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting because like right when you immediately say that it's, you know, it's easy and it's all this kind of stuff, all I want to do is say it's not. It's easy.
It's like
as easy as you want to make it.
Yes.
But it's as hard as you want to make it.
Absolutely. It's easy in the sense that the rules are approachable. The game is approachable. The cards are colorful. It invites you in. The theme is different. It's unique.
Very, very much so.
From anything that I've noticed or I've played. And I mean, you could teach this game to somebody in 5 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. So the gist of the game is you have 7 geisha. Each of the geishas kind of have different numeric value. And there's 21 cards in the deck. Basically, every round you're always throwing one card out that creates kind of that randomness that you can't always expect how the game is going to go, which I quite appreciate. And really at that point, you're structured into 4 moves. So 4 moves are identified by these little cool tokens they have. One thing is you can take one card out of your hand, you turn it face down. That's a guaranteed keep for you.
You score it at the end of the round. Yep. Yep.
There's one where you take 2 cards out of your hand and you trash them. So they don't get scored. It very easily can be something you screw yourself over, but you can screw your opponent over as well.
Something that's very important to mention about that second one where you are trashing the 2 cards is that they are trashed face down. You know what they are, but your opponent does not.
Correct. And the next one we have is it's a 3 card. So basically you lay 3 cards out of your hand and your opponent gets to choose one of them and you get to keep the other 2. It's basically, I mean, you're flat out and giving somebody the option of what they want to score. And so you kind of get to sit there and look at what you're being offered and really make that evaluation on the cards over, you know, which way something's going to go. And then your last option is, what did you call it?
I split, you choose. It's the same mechanic that you'll find in games like New York Slice. New York Slice is about it's a pizza game where it's like you're splitting pizza, and that's literally what it is. I split the pizza. You choose which piece you want, like which part of the split you want.
Interesting.
And this is the exact same thing. You take four cards from your hand, you put them face up on the table, separate them into two separate piles of two, mm-hmm. and then your opponent has the first choice.
Yeah,
and then you get whatever's left.
Exactly.
So it's super important to make that decision, that pick between the two piles. It is so incredibly important to make that split as fair as possible, but you don't have all the information because you have hidden cards.
Yeah.
Your opponent has a bunch of hidden information because they have hidden cards, and it just makes you sit there and grind through it and be thinking, not unlike a game of chess where you're trying to think, okay, you know, or poker or something like that, where you're trying to pick up on literally anything from your opponent.
Yeah.
Is it like a tick or a eye twitch or like all kinds of stuff like that? I mean, again, it like what Debbie said earlier, you're able to go as deep as you want. Like you can make it as complicated as you want to make it.
Right. It's a very interesting balance between the known and the unknown. It's kind of one of those situations where you almost wish you didn't know anything, because knowing a little bit just makes it that much harder, because now all of a sudden you have partial information. You're like, okay, well, what are the chances that it's this? What are the chances that it's this? Each of the geisha have different number of cards to them. So there's three geishas that only have two cards. There's two that have three. There's one that has four and one that has five. So they're not all even and they're not all the same. I remember when we first started playing this game, you and I very typically kind of had this idea that the geisha that's worth the most, which is five, is the one that you want to strive for, because if you get that, that's the way to win. Well, let me tell you,
that is not the way to win.
That is not the way to win.
That is not the way to win.
If you can balance it and get, so you're, there's two winning conditions. One is 11 points or four geisha. If you're aiming for the five, that also means that you're trying to manipulate the better half of five cards. So you're trying to manipulate three cards to stay in your favor, whereas there's three twos and one and two threes. And the second you get four of those geisha, you win, right? Whereas somebody else is very easily trying to balance and take over this five. It's a very interesting, like you said, it's just very different. It's very out of the box from a lot of the games that I think both of us see quite regularly. And was this a stumble upon for you?
This one I had heard rumors about. I had done a bit of reading on Board Game Geek and kind of watched some online forums and that sort of stuff about games that would be good for two players. And I kept seeing this name come up, Hanami Koji, but no one really talked about it. Like, they're like, hey, this is a really good two-player game, period, end of sentence, no fucking context whatsoever. It's absolutely unbelievable. I was like, what? Like, if you say this game is so good, like, give me something. Give me something to grab onto. And nobody would. Like, nobody really talked about it. So I was like, okay. I was looking around. It was out of print for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then, which made me want it even more, because, of course, you always want the thing that you can't have, right? So I wanted it even more because the fact that I just, like, it was out of print. Like, you could not find a copy of it. I mean, it's not like you couldn't buy it, except you're not going to buy it for any sort of reasonable price.
Right.
Eventually when it did come back into another print run, I found it for under $20. Like, I think that's what I picked it up for, Canadian. again, we're Canadian. A maple syrup, moose, Royal Mountain Police, like, like whatever, like RCMP. That's, you know, that's all us. But like I picked it up for a good price. And again, I have been super thrilled with my purchase.
Yeah, it's funny. You're very much like a little kid. It's like the big red button. You know, mom and dad tell you you're not allowed to hit the big red button. Red's bad. But you just, you really want to.
Yeah, that's don't touch the stove. It's hot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so you. It's like, oh, it's out of print. You can't have it. Well, but I want it. And I want it really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny that since we've started doing this podcast, I can agree with you that, you know, before we started doing this podcast, it used to annoy me when I'd see something about a game and I'd be like, man, like, tell me more. Like, I want to know. Give me something. Give me some idea of what this is. But since working on these podcasts, I've realized how hard it is to condense.
Like your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like trying to tell people what a game is, what it's about, what its merits are, you know, who would like it and who, and being able to actually like articulate that in a very short.
Sure, sure.
Is very difficult, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you think about these people who are like, yeah, it's just a really good game. Well, I don't want to spend half an hour typing out some message that somebody's only going to read like three sentences of.
The TLDR.
Yeah. Right? So I kind of get it that people don't really give you what you want to know. But
like the thing is people,
but
like,
it's so hard.
So many people are out there on BoardGameGeek, on the forums, like typing, you know, they type out this huge thing. They type out this huge thing talking about, oh, you know what, my spouse and I, or my girlfriend or whatever, my son, my daughter, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? They type out this huge thing and they start talking about all these games. This game, that game, this game. This is a good game. This is a good game. This is a good game for two players. We love playing this, that, and the other thing. And they give, like, you know, decent blurbs about it.
Yeah.
And then like, so many people that I saw get to Hanami Koji, and they're like, yeah, we love playing Hanami Koji. Full stop. Like, page break, you know. It's like, man, like, throw me a fucking bone here, boys or girls. Seriously. Like, that'd be like, oh, you know what? I really like the Calgary Flames.
Okay, so I have a very theoretical question for you.
Sure.
Have you gone to BoardGameGeek to go and say, hey, I know this is really annoying, so I'm going to go fill in and give other people the information about Hanami Koji?
Why do you think we're recording this podcast episode?
Well, I'm just saying, we've had this for a long time, and you could have in the last, what, 3 years, I think we've probably had this game.
At least 3 years,
yeah. Could have gone on to...
Well, yeah, but I didn't want to type out all this stuff. See? And, you know, I will tell you this, though, in, you know, and this is a bit of an aside, but
slide,
like...
Slide past the conversation.
No. I'm actually... This is actually relevant to the conversation.
All right.
In the time since we've started to work on this podcast, in the time since I've started being more like out there as a streamer and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I've gone from writing emails to people that are literally one or two sentences, hi, insert name here, or dear, insert name here, sentence, thanks, Adam. Right. Yeah. And ship it.
Yeah.
Now that I've just had more practice and more opportunity to, and I've had to be articulate and, you know, trying to get my information across, and I don't have to be. And whereas, sorry, my job is more about conveying information, and it doesn't have to be super short. And like, people are looking more for details and they want more depth and they want all that sort of stuff. That now, like I said, these emails or any sort of thing that I write out now is more, it's gone from being sentences to being paragraphs, which isn't necessarily the worst thing, but you know, I definitely see where you're coming from, where people are kind of have the TLDR mentality to an extent, where they're like, look, I just want the fucking point.
Well, I mean, when you spend 15 minutes playing the game, you don't want to spend double that amount of time trying to explain it to somebody. I'm not going to lie. That's probably one of my, like, minor pet peeves when it comes to board games.
What?
The learning process, right? And explaining it to people.
Yeah.
When it takes twice as long as the game does to play, that really blows rear end.
Well, I will say that the board game industry, the board game hobby has gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of people, like Rodney Smith comes to mind. He's the guy who does the Watch It Played series. Yep. Rotto is another one. He does Rotto Runs Through. These guys are doing reasonably high quality play videos or explanation videos, where if you don't want to necessarily sit there and read through a rule book or stuff like that, then I mean, there is another option out there for you. Yeah. Now for a game like Hanami Koji, that's not necessary. Cause I mean, literally this rule book is what, like 6x4. It's smaller than a postcard. Yeah. It's about the size of an index card. Yep. And it is, I mean, with a good amount of pictures, and it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pages.
Yep.
Seven index cards. I think a bunch of them are just pictures.
I think the depth of this game is not how to play it. It's playing it.
No, of course. Absolutely. Right?
The depth of this game, because it comes across as such a simplistic game. And like I said, it really can be. You both players would definitely have to play it fairly simplistically. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're just going to get railroaded. But it's definitely not the lightest of the games that we have.
No, absolutely not.
By any stretch.
But it's sneaky in the sense that it presents itself as a light, airy...
It does, yeah.
Like it presents itself as a light game. It presents itself, just sit down with your cup of tea or whatever the hell after dinner, and just have yourself a board game, and then you start
have yourself a
board game. Yes, yes.
Have yourself a cookie and a board game.
That's gonna be a quote here soon. Just have yourself a board game. But as you do that, like, and then as you get like deeper into it. As you get deeper into this game,
yeah.
All of a sudden, it's like an onion. It has layers.
It does.
It's like Shrek.
It's funny, actually, because I don't know if I've mentioned this before. There's one of the girls I work with, actually, she's very much, her husband is very relatively similar to you. He's quite a bit more on the gaming side. But they do enjoy board games, and she is one of the ones that often asks me about games. And I'm actually probably going to take this with me to work, and I'm probably going to give it to her for a little bit and let her and her husband kind of take a poke at this and see what they think.
Yeah.
Cause I'm curious. I'm very curious to know, like, cause I think, yeah, I think it has that, definitely has that potential. It really does kind of suck that if it is out of print, I'm guessing.
I was hunting it for a while. Yeah. I was hunting it for probably the better part of a year before I found a copy.
Yeah.
In print. But then when I did find it in print, it's super affordable.
Yeah. But we've taken this with us. Like we went on a road trip. I don't know of the Midwest. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, yeah, the United States Midwest. So
we did Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Detroit.
Yeah,
And we brought this with us because
it's a perfect travel
super,
size,
super small, and it you definitely have to think like it's something that you have to put some thought into. Funny enough, while we were in Pittsburgh, I managed to find the second half of this. I know it's the successor.
There's more than just two of them now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But we picked this up when we were in Pittsburgh, found an awesome little, board game shop. That was amazing. Super great little place. And I kind of really wanted to support them as well. And so while we were there, I was like, I saw that this was there and I was like, oh, I really want it. And really up for, you know, supporting these guys. And so bought it and we haven't played it yet.
No, but again, it is another two player only game. It's done in the same world. It's in the same art style, which I mean, we haven't touched too much on the art style yet. I love the art style here, and it's not really something that I thought I would enjoy as much as I do. It's a very colorful, light-hearted, kind of Japanese anime kind of look to it, mixed with like this kind of gloss of traditional, almost feudal Japan style art style over top of it. Like there's just certain things, like, you know, like the little kanji that they have over here, and the, you know, like just there's certain touches on it that I really do appreciate, the characters on the scrolls on the side of the item cards and that sort of stuff.
I think things like that have to do with the fact that I really think that this game is probably much more common in the Asian countries.
Okay.
Judging from the fact that everything is like, you look at the manual and everything's like, I mean, really your choices are, what did you say? Cantonese, Mandarin,
Japanese and English. Yeah.
Like usually a lot of the board games that we have are like German, French, English, right?
Sure.
This has three Asian languages and English. So I'm assuming that this game is probably a little more.
Well, I would take
comment on that side.
I would take a guess, and I'm just going to quickly confirm it, but I would take a guess that Emperor S4.
Taipei, Taiwan.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, so I mean, like, I think that kind of like lends itself.
Basically what I'm saying is I don't think that the characters are an art style. I think it's because it's not primarily an English game.
Sure.
Is what I write. Like,
well, it's just from a Taiwanese producer. Like, right. It's from a Taiwanese distributor.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you take any other game, right, that's in English, and you take it somewhere else and you're like, oh, I like the art style because it's written in English. Well, that's not an art style.
No.
It's just a language.
No, I get that. But this is clearly meant, and they obviously followed it up with Shadows in Kyoto.
Yeah.
Of this like, you know, 100% female driven, colorful, anime-esque, with certain classic touches and classic flourishes put on top of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I'm not much of an anime person. Like, I've never really been drawn into anime.
Sailor Moon's not your girl?
No, not particularly. Although I did watch some Sailor Moon as a kid. I
did not. But you watched Pokemon, didn't you?
Yeah, of course. I do love Pokemon.
Of course. Like, I've never seen a single episode of Pokemon in my life.
Man, I don't know, like, what happened.
Pokemon was until you came along.
People are going to turn this podcast off, and they're going to sharpen their pitchforks, and they're going to come over to your Twitter.
They're
going to
be so judgy.
At Mrs. Wynn, and they're going to light you up over never having seen Pokemon.
Yeah, I never. But there was one thing that I am going to kind of tweak.
Mm-hmm.
That you said. So art style wise, you said it's super colorful. It's a very muted color.
Like, but when, that's so nice.
Right, it is. I agree. But I just, so when you say something super colorful and you bring up anime, I think like,
oh, okay.
Like bright yellow and bright pink, yeah, 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 and bright, yeah, yeah, purple and like in your face colors. These are very muted, like beautiful. They're like, they're more like, you know, Asian art style.
Yeah.
Of a very, you know, muted colors, not super bright, like, but beautiful.
Okay.
And intricate.
Yeah. I guess the point I was trying to make is that they used an entire color palette. Like they didn't just say, you know what, we're going to take the brown section or the blues section of the color palette, and we're just going to do everything with various shades of blue and gray and black.
Yeah.
Like they have, you know, like there's oranges and yellows and reds and blues and greens and like, it's purples and there's all over the place, pinks, you know, and it like, you're right. It is muted. It's not super in your face,
mm-hmm,
but at the same time it is appreciated.
Yes, very much so. And I get what you're saying. I want to make sure that when you're, cause when you, like, I honestly, when you say that something's A, colorful, and B, you bring in anime, I think like Sailor Moon, and
yeah, yeah,
that's the last, yeah, super thing bright, that they say, right?
Yeah.
So, beyond that, I mean, it's all cards, right? There's no dice, nothing, mm-hmm, like that.
That's also appreciated.
Yeah, cardboard tokens. Normally, we have the sleeved. The tarot card sleeves are a little harder to get to, but they're an odder shape, but having this thing sleeved is super nice, and it just makes it, you know, easy. You can take it wherever you go. Doesn't really matter. You take it to a coffee shop. Doesn't matter. You can drop a little coffee on it. You got a sleeve on it. Who cares? It's not a big deal.
That's really a me thing. Like, I think that there's definitely a couple different camps of gamers, like board gamers. There's people who like sleeve everything, and then people who sleeve nothing.
Right. And I think I am very far away from the Adam camp of sleeving everything, but this is the kind of game where I'm saying, like, it's small and it's portable and it's something that you can easily play in, you know, like you go with your friend for a coffee, the coffee shop, very easily. You bring it with you, you throw some sleeves on it. You don't have to worry about it getting ruined or anything like that. Like, it's just accessible. And I like that. I don't know. There's not really a whole lot to say really about this.
I think we've really kind of like hashed through our pros and what the cons. I mean, what cons can we really, like, I mean, realistically, what cons can we bring up about this game? Like, it's.
So I can see how sometimes this can get really frustrating.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, if you're playing against somebody who, it's kind of the same thing as Santorini for me, in the sense that you have to think about things in a very particular way, right? Like, you need to have a lot of forethought and a lot of the idea in your mind of, okay, so what possibilities are out there? What cards can they have in their hands? And if you're playing with somebody who is much more on the far end of that, like when we first started playing this tonight, you were so far into the tank compared to me, it's not even funny. And you steamrolled me, right?
Right.
And that is very easy to do when you have two people that are on very different kind of playing fields when it comes to something like that. That is the downside to this game, is this game can very easily lend itself to one person really likes it and one person's like, I don't want to play it because I can't win.
Sure, sure. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, and that is extremely frustrating. It's kind of gets to that point where you're just like, okay, I've had enough. I want to play something quote unquote fun. and that's the only downside that I can see to this. Like, this is not something that you and I really should play after I've been at work for 9 hours and my brain is.
Sure. Yeah. Mush, yeah.
Right. Because yeah. I don't do very well at it and I don't, right. This is much better for like you and I when it's on a weekend or when we're on a trip and it's like my brain is active, but it's not like, yeah, it hasn't been overworked. Because that is where I can see where the fatigue of this comes from.
Yeah. I think that what you're saying is that like the hidden complexity and the hidden depth of it can be,
it's a double-edged sword for sure.
Yeah. Like it can be the best part about the game. It can also be the worst part about the game.
So there's one thing that it's like going to be nails on a chalkboard for you, for me to say this, but there is merit to dice games and chance games.
Sure.
Is they lend themselves a little bit more to the side of you don't have to worry about that as much.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm thinking about, there's another episode that you guys will hear from us for Herbaceous. It's a little more random driven, and so I, you know, when I have that fatigue, right, it's not as big of a deal, and I don't have to worry about the fact that you're gonna literally steamroll the hell out of me. Because so there is merit, and I know you don't like dice and I know you don't like randomness and you don't like any of that stuff, but there is merit to that, and this is the kind of thing that merit comes to is the fatigue that you can get from completely removing that randomness is a little frustrating for me when you get into something like this. The randomness that does come into this that I appreciate, like I said at the very beginning, is one card gets tossed. Yes, that makes it a little more complex, but that does add that random factor.
I think it adds like a controlled randomness. Like, it's not random to the sense of like, so what I don't like about games involving dice is I hate games where your entire turn or your entire game plan hinges on a die roll. I hate it when you are like, man, I have to roll a 5 or a 6 on this 6-sided die. And if I can't get a 5 or a 6, then like I'm screwed.
Yes, and I agree with you. There's definitely a very like a there's a gradient to this. But I'm just saying, like that's my, you know, we were talking about what are the cons to this? Well, there's the con, right? The sure. con is that there is the same thing that I find with Santorini. Santorini is by far one of your favorite games.
I do love Santorini. And you love it. Yeah.
And it very much is it just can cause a whole lot of fatigue for the other person if they're not on the same kind yeah. of the same wavelength as you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think that Santorini as well as this game is a game that is best when you are ready to board game.
Yeah. And that's unfortunately a lot of the time when you're talking about two player games, that's not always the situation you're in. Do you know what I mean? Like two player games, a lot of the time are, you know, after work in the evening when you're just trying to,
just trying to get down. Something in. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Like that's again another one you guys are going to hear from us is Charterstone. And Charterstone for me, that's kind of that hits that spot a little bit better for me. But again, I still love really meaty games that I can poke at you with. I don't know. Maybe your brain doesn't shut off and mine does. I've got nothing.
I mean, different people have different thoughts on board games, and I mean, I think I think that this is where like a, you know, like a top 10 episode or something is good, as you kind of get to know the people, right? You get to know the players, right? And the people who are on the podcast and what they think. And then, you know, you can kind of draw some correlations and be like, oh, you know what? I really kind of like my personal top 10 resonates closest to your Debbie's personal top 10. So, you know, maybe I will put, you know, a touch more weight on her opinions on games. Like I tell you what, another bunch of board game reviewers, like the big, you know, the big guys, like the Dice Tower guys, there's three of them. And I pay attention to one of their reviews quite strongly. I pay attention to one person's reviews quite moderately, and then I just totally glaze over Sam Healy's stuff 9 times out of 10 because he likes games that are the exact opposite of what I like.
Yeah. So we digress. I apologize. Cons for you for Hanamakoji? Nothing.
I can't really come up with anything off. Like I love the game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's
maybe hard to find, probably
hard to find. There's not enough of it. Like I just want more of it, I guess would be a con. Like, but then again, if there was more of it, then I don't think I would like it. Cause then it would be too long. Like it's just a perfect, like you play it in three rounds. That's it. At the end of three rounds, if you don't have a winner, then like there's a bunch of scoring that you go through, right? Like, it's just whoever has more geishas at that point. And then if you're tied for geishas, whoever has more points. And then if somehow you're still tied, which has never happened to me in any number of these games that I've ever played, then you just share the victory, which I mean, you know.
We can't share anything, Adam. No. Let's be realistic.
No. Cons in this game are few. I think it's really good. I would like, again, I would like more of it. But then if you had more of it, it would be too much. That's mm-hmm. really all I can say.
Yeah.
In terms of a two-player game, I would love to have is something similar to Hanamikoji that plays more than two players, but I think that's now you're starting to creep into where like Seven Wonders territory, and then like, you know, my views on Seven Wonders, I mean, I could do a whole podcast episode on just Seven Wonders and how I feel that it's best at a minimum of five players.
Right.
Like that game is just, it's not great until you get to the five player count.
Yeah. I don't know that I can see how this would work very well with a lot of people, but
I'm not saying it would. I'm just,
no. But yeah, I mean, really there's, we don't have much more except for the old
views, the ratings. Yeah. 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 Well,
you go first.
Okay. Again, I like it. I think this game is great. For a two-player game, this is exactly what I want. It's fast.
Yeah.
It's condensed. It's easy yet hard. Like it's shallow yet deep. Like none of those are actually conveying what I really want to say. But mm-hmm. like there's hidden depth. Like there's hidden depth. Like it's an easy game to pick up. It's a hard game to master. That's the reason, like, that's something that I love about board games, is I love to get into it and play a few games and just kind of have this moment of realization where you're like, wait a fucking minute. You know, and then all of a sudden you realize that, like, everything that you've been, like, looking at on the surface is just that, like, it is just surface. Yeah. And then you kind of go past that surface level, and there's just this whole world of strategy that you can, like, build into and stuff like that. Again, it has next to no randomness. It has just enough randomness to keep it interesting without making it a coin flip or a roll of the die or something like that. Like, that shit, I just can't, like, it's a pain in the ass. And for me, I don't like it. Like, I would rather play a game of skill as opposed to a game of chance.
Yeah. It's, what's your number?
9 out of 10. 9 out of 10. Great game.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you can find a copy of it, I would definitely pick up a copy. If you have somebody who's interested in strategic style board games, the theme on it is, it's, again, I said, it's unique. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Although this definitely leans more, you know, Euro style, where the theme doesn't really matter. Like, the theme doesn't really have an impact. Yeah, you could really put any, you could put any theme over top of this thing and the game would still play fine.
Yeah.
It's just the theme that they chose was unique and interesting.
Yeah. I struggle with my score on this one.
Sure.
That's fine. It is, for what it is, it's absolutely fantastic, right? I would give it a 5 for the fact that it is a very well-made game and it is a lot of fun, but it is not the kind of game that I feel you can fall back on every single day to play, because I think that you could get some fatigue out of this. And I think that that comes down to the, like, you know, in our other episodes, I do tend to say that you and I are fairly heavy Euro gamers. Mm-hmm. You are definitely much deeper and much, much farther into that than me. Mm-hmm. And this is where stuff like that starts to show, is that when we're talking about something that's 15 minutes, that I don't have the time to create my engine,
mm-hmm.
I tend to fall out a little bit. So it's great because it's small and it is a lot of fun, and it's something that I really enjoy us having. And I like being able to go to it and travel with it and things like that. And I give it a 5 with the idea that it's, like, keep in mind that this is also not a game that I would pull out 4 days a week.
No. I don't,
because it's like, there's just way you can overthink this game.
Sure.
Like, there, I very easily, you can sit there and you can basically write the statistics out for it, and you can really give yourself way too far down that rabbit hole with this game. And I feel that that's sometimes where I would sit, mm-hmm. is I just, you want to win it so bad and you have such a narrow window because it's such a short game that that's where I fall kind of short a little bit. So, I mean, to be honest, I hate doing, but the 4.5 is probably a little closer to true for me.
Sure.
But it is a fantastic game. You just really have to be,
you got
to
be in it. Like, you have to have the mindset to be into this game.
Yeah.
Like into a game of chess. Like, it's, Hanami Koji and Santorini are very similar in the fact that they are strategic,
Forward thinking.
Yes. That's a great term for it. Yeah. They're strategic forward thinking games.
Yeah.
Like, they're chunky, they're grindy, they're brain burny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can walk away.
This is much worse than Santorini for me.
Interesting. Okay.
This is Santorini. I find that you have, because it's a little longer, you have a little bit more time to, I made an oops, but it's okay. I can still kind of, right, work my way around that. Whereas in this game, I find that the second you make that oops, depending on where you make that oops, it can be devastating, right? You and I played there's one game where we literally played one round.
Yeah.
And you had my ass in one round.
Yeah.
Right? You make one oops and it's
Well, and
right, but and so that's why I say that Santorini. I find Santorini a little.
But I think that something that like this game makes it not as bad is if you make that little oops. I mean, like, okay, you lost the game in the first round,
and you play another one.
Yeah, and like, how long did that take you? 5 minutes.
Yeah,
at the most.
Yeah, but how many games do you want to play where you lose something?
I don't know. I don't mind.
Oh, don't say that. You are lying.
No, like, I mean, you beat me the third game we played tonight, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yes, but if you lost
three games in a row,
I mean,
it would start to wear. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, like, I mean, it's no, of course, who goes into a game and be like, you know what, I'm going to lose this game. That's not what you do.
Right, right. And that's all I'm saying,
yeah.
Right, is it's just like, that's the flip side of it. It's a very double-edged sword with games like this because of what they are. Very double-edged sword. I do look forward to pulling out something a little lighter.
Sure.
But I didn't actually give you... Oh, no, I did. I was about 4.5. Sorry. Yeah, so I look forward to us kind of bringing out something a little lighter for two players. I think that is also going to resonate with some other people, right? I think that we've gotten a couple games for some meatier players, and I want to kind of try to get a couple games in there for a little lighter players, and I look forward to that.
Sure.
I look forward to kicking your ass with the herb bun or whatever the hell it is that's in here.
The cheese biscuit. The herb cheese biscuit.
There's no cheese in it.
No, there's definitely cheese in that biscuit.
It is just a herb biscuit.
Is it just a herb biscuit?
It is just the herb biscuit.
Oh, man. I want some cheese in it.
So, as you guys heard, we are talking about a game called Herbaceous. That is likely going to be your next special Adam and Debbie episode of the classic two-player couple style games that we're hoping you guys really enjoy. We hope you guys you're liking kind of what we're putting out for you guys right now, and hopefully it kind of fills that little void for anybody that was like us, that is like us, that's kind of constantly looking for that ultimate two-player game.
Yeah, for sure. Well, until next time then.
Yeah, do you want to give some pluggage?
Oh, yes, let's not forget about this. So guys, of course, if you are looking to get a hold of myself, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at For The Win, FORTHEWHYN. You can find me on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/ForTheWin, FORTHEWHYN. Coincidentally, this is the first episode. We are recording this. We are also streaming it. So we are live streaming this on Twitch while we record it. So if you are interested in kind of watching us play through a game or two or three, we played three games of Hanami Koji. We played through three games of Hanami Koji, and we live streamed all three of them, and then live streamed our entire recording process. So if you guys are interested in that, like, catch up with us on Twitter, drop a follow, twitch.tv/ForTheWin.
Yes. And you can get, the CGS podcast, at Twitter, on Twitter.
On Twitter. On the Twitter box. Yeah.
We are at CGS Podcast. You can also email it's not the Collapsing Game Shelf. It is just collapsinggameshelf@gmail.com. I do try, I swear to God, I try my hardest to stay up with, you know, Twitter and the email, things like that. If you have a question, if you have a comment, anything, you know, game you think that we should play as a four-player group, anything like that, let us know. We really want to hear about it. And make sure you guys are giving us, you know, the four-star, five-star review. God, don't
all
give us
the stars. Give us all the stars.
Whatever you can give us, give it to us.
Just give it to us, yes.
We want it.
Yes, you can find us on wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Collapsing Game Shelf. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
And like I said, let us know if there's something you guys want to see. Judging from the size of our collection, Thomas's or Tom's collection, Bilbo's, Justin's collection. There's a chance that we have it. And if we don't have it, you know what? There's a lot of people that we know that probably might have something. So we can always try to give something a try.
Yeah.
Otherwise, come chat with us. We look forward to talking to you guys again.
And
bye.
Bye.